Well, hey there, freaks. It's your boy Marty Bent here on another Thursday afternoon ripping Rabbit Hole Recap with our boy Matt O'Dell. What's up, Matt?
What is up, freaks? Excited to be here today.
Yeah, we got a quick rip. We got Andrew Chow coming in the studio after this to talk about pre-signed Bitcoin, partially signed Bitcoin transactions.
Wow, God, you figured out a new way to fuck it up.
God damn it. Partially signed Bitcoin transactions. But before we get to that, today we're using Clark Moody's Bitcoin dashboard, bitcoin.clarkmoody.com/dashboard for our stats. According to Clark's site, according to his dashboard, the current price of Bitcoin is $7,820. Currently, 12,788 sats per dollar. We're at block height 612,073. How far away are we from the next halving?
He has it listed there.
We're 17,927 blocks.
Can I jump in here real quick?
Jump in.
First of all, Clark, awesome fucking dashboard. Really happy to see sats per dollar up there. One thing he just added today, which I think we should shout out every episode going forward because I think it's a really important stat, and it's partially because I was poking him to add it, so I'm like really excited about it as well, is he lists the capacity, the lightning channel capacity, lightning network channel capacity for Tor nodes on the site, which is right now it's sitting at 348 Bitcoin out of 858 total Bitcoin in public channels.
340.64 out of 858.
I read zero as eight from because I didn't want to like look down on my computer too much. My bad, guys. But anyway, what we should shout out every week is the percentage that it makes up, which is 39.7%. And I think the importance there is because, you know, a lot of people that critique Lightning, and me included, even as someone who is bullish on Lightning, you know, we worry about the idea that you have these large nodes that are run by regulated companies that are operating the Lightning network, where you like have to connect to like BitRefill or something in order to get liquidity. So it's really important, I think, to see a lot of Tor capacity because the Tor nodes can be run without a known identity, without doxing your IP address. So people can run them from around the world and help provide routing liquidity to the network. So hopefully we see that percentage go up. Almost 40% is pretty damn good, I would say, so far.
I'd say it's pretty material. It's not too shabby.
Yeah.
It's it's way more than I would actually have guessed.
I know. I was excited to see that.
Yeah. So shout out to Clark. I think I tweeted this out over the weekend and some freaks were like, I need this. I want this. I want that. And then like 3 days later, he's got a bunch of new stats up on the dashboard. So again, bitcoin.clarkmoody.com/dashboard. And Clark, maybe stealing your idea.
It's such a nice fucking dashboard.
Yeah, no, it's so perfect.
I set it as a shortcut on my phone and my computer.
Yeah, it's all my I don't have many bookmark tabs.
Yeah, and then you just click it and you just get everything you need to know right away.
Yeah, concise.
It's fantastic. Check it out.
And is Clark's co-host of Bitcoin Matters, correct?
I know he did. He created that one of the first, not charting websites, but stats websites with Dan Held. What do they call it? Zero something?
It was Zero Block.
Zero Block, and then they were purchased by someone else. So this is very similar to the vein of Zero Block, but has way more information. I like how clean it is. It's just very concise, but gives you a lot of information, like everything you could really want.
That's Shane Kennedy, who's Bitcoin Matters, not Clark Moody. Clark.
Yeah, I didn't think Clark.
Shane and Clark, I'm sorry for getting you guys confused.
Clark has a blog, though, that's pretty good.
Yes, yes. Bitcoin Matters, good podcast with Beauty on and Shane Kennedy as well. Sorry for that slight confusion there. Before we jump into the topics, we got a heartfelt shout out this week. And let's just read it. We don't know who it's from. This read is for Avid Bitcoiner at Average Joe Punter. That's at AVG. JOEPUNTER. I personally know with the fires in Australia, he's been hit hard. I won't dox him in any way, but he's a small business owner, works 7 days a week, and loves the Bitcoin community. Chin up, buddy. All will be all right in the future. Yeah, Average Joe Punter, we're thinking of you, man.
This one hits home.
Yeah.
I love Average Joe. He's great.
Yeah, he's got the spacesuit avatar. Average Joe, if you're listening, we're thinking of you, man. Tragic stuff, what's going on over there.
And I'm looking on his Twitter right now, like insurance fucked him and shit like that. Like,
really?
It's just fucked up, man.
Yeah. The we have an update on the fire situation over there. I saw it was raining in a certain part.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
It's fucking tragic what's been going on. But yeah, Average Joe, we're thinking of you, and shout out to that anonymous person who thought of Average Joe Punter. We have no idea who sent that.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
By the way. So cheers to whoever sent that.
Yeah.
Cheers to you as well.
Cheers to you. This episode of Tales from the Crypt is also brought to you by the Cash App. As you know, Cash App is the simplest way to send and save money, and now it's the simplest way to grow your money. Introducing Cash App Investing. Unlike investing tools that only let you buy entire shares of stock, Cash App lets you instantly invest as little as much as you want. This way, when your favorite company stock is just a little too expensive, you can still own a piece or as little as $1. We're stacking slivers of shares. You don't have to if you don't want to. You can still stack sats, send sats, receive sats. Because Cash App is directly connected to your bank account, there are no 4 to 5 day waiting periods for transfers, so you can start investing today. Brokerage services are provided by Cash App Investing, a subsidiary of Square, and member SIPC. And as always, when you sign up, use the code STACKINGSATS. You're going to get $10, and $10 is going to go to Owls Lacrosse. Download Cash App from the App Store today.
Week? Yeah. I apologize. Continue.
I'll give you a better one next week. This episode is also brought to you by our good friends at Unchained Capital. You freaks already know all about them. They're a Bitcoin financial services firm, really focusing on multi-sig and collaborative custody. They have their Vault program where you can engage in a multi-sig quorum with Unchained. And if you ever need them to sign off on a multi-sig transaction, they are there for you. On top of that, they have their loan programs. If you don't want to sell your Bitcoin, if you're thinking about selling your Bitcoin, Unchained is there to help you not sell your Bitcoin. You can use your Bitcoin as collateral and get a US dollar-backed loan, so you don't have to sell. As long as you're paying back the loan, you get to keep your Bitcoin. On top of that, they're working on a bunch of open source stuff, including Caravan, which is their open source multi-sig quorum, which if you don't want to engage in the multi-sig quorum with Unchained, you can do it yourself. They've open sourced the tools that allow you to do that. Slip39, Hermit, or other open source projects they're working on. And then Parker Lewis, repeat guest on this podcast, writes an incredible blog called Gradually Then Suddenly, all at unchained-capital.com. That's unchained-capital.com. And thank you for letting me spring the ads on you there. Just had to fit them in there real quick.
Got it done.
Yeah, and we have to make a correction from last week. I forgot to correct you the day after speaking with Alex. River Financial, which is formerly Alto Financial and is the new exchange helping you guys DCA into Bitcoin very easily, is only in 8 states, not 48.
I said 49, actually.
Did you say 49?
I said 49. I was that wrong. Yeah. Apologies, freaks. He was also, Alex Leishman was also on the pod with Marty. You should listen to that episode. It was a great episode. The reason I said 49 states is because so many of these Bitcoin apps, including like Escher Hub and stuff, are 49 states except for New York, thanks to Ben Lawski. So actually that kind of makes me feel a little bit better. At least we're not the only state that it's not accepted in.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Usually it burns.
Slowly but surely. They'll get there.
I was talking about Escher Hub, like they're New Yorkers. They created a product they can't even use. 49 states can use it, but they can't use it themselves.
Right.
So fucked up.
Fuck you, Ben Lawski.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Had to get that one in.
And then the other correction I wanted to do was we spoke about Fink's chat, and I wasn't sure if I was allowed to talk about it. Did I not pronounce it well?
I think you just said Fink's.
Sphinx.
Sphinx.
Sphinx? Sphinx. It's Sphinx. It's like the cat, the Egyptian cat statue. Yeah. And the website is sphinx.chat. And you can get invited to the beta if you put in your email address there. The correction that I wanted to say is I said I wasn't sure if it was like WhatsApp where the payments were actually being sent over the Lightning Network. They are in fact being sent over the Lightning Network.
The messages.
Yeah, it's one sat. Every message is one sat.
It's not a bad price.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you're paying them one sat. That's just like, it's a one sat payment that's routing.
Yeah.
With a message on it. We'll know more, but it's very interesting flow. I've downloaded the beta, and the flow is very clean. You can pay in line. It's P2P encrypted messaging through the Lightning Network with built-in Lightning payments as well. So you can request and send money to your contacts in the in the chat app.
I have yet to test it out. I'm going to download that and test it out this weekend. But that sounds dope, dude. Like, imagine if that's like a little Trojan horse right there. It's a little niche app, but it's like end-to-end encrypted and running on this completely different network.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not completely sold on it yet, but Keto Miner's like super bullish on it, and I'm bullish on keto, so.
Yeah, shout out to Keto.
So I'll tell you, the interface is fucking slick. The interface is like absolutely fucking slick, so I'm excited. I am excited about it.
Yeah, I need to get a fire lit under my ass and get on downloading that and using it.
Yeah, I think to invite someone, you have to pay 250 sats, and it expires in 24 hours, so when I invited you and you didn't accept the invitation, I lost 250 sats. So you could put that on my tab.
Put that in my pipe and smoke it. I'm sorry. I'll repay you the 250 sats.
Appreciate,
what's that?
Appreciate like, that. It's less than a penny. Yeah, I don't even know what it is, right?
It'd be like... It's, I feel like it's 1,200 for
two
a dime.
Cents, right?
I'm thinking of the dime bag right now. I think we got 1,200 sats it's for two less cents. Dime bag.
It's 2 cents.
Yeah, something like that.
Don't worry, it's on me.
Yeah, so
I'll send you another invite.
Sphinx, S-P-H-I-N-X .chat. Go check it out. Whirlpool, we talked about it last week. They already released a new version. Whirlpool CLI 0.10.2 has been released.
Yeah, this was not as much a correction as a further explanation. I wanted to dive a little bit deeper in here. Well, first of all, they did release a new Whirlpool CLI, which is, it makes it way more stable. It's the performance, it just seems like it's performing like significantly better. The Tor connection, like everything, just seems much more smooth. So if you're using Whirlpool, definitely go download that. What I want to talk about a little bit more in detail was I was discussing how cheap fees are on Whirlpool, because I actually didn't realize myself, even though I've been using it. The whole point of fees for these CoinJoin coordination services are twofold. Obviously, the coordinators want to make some money for actually operating the coordinator server, whether that's Samurai or Wasabi. The second reason is because of Sybil resistance. Basically, like the way you attack these CoinJoin services is by putting in a ton of transactions. And since they're all your transactions, you can do process of elimination of who the rest are, right? So you just send in a bunch and you try and be like all the participants in a round except for one or two people, and you can isolate them.
Yeah, and we've seen this happen accidentally with like the Huobi Plus token hacker. Or robber, not a hacker.
Right, so that's not really necessarily a Sybil attack, but if one big player is putting a lot of transactions in and they're not doing good privacy, then...
It's an unintentional Sybil attack.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so you have the fee there, and the reason you have the fee there is because it costs them money. As they keep trying to add more attack transactions into the mix, it costs them an increasing amount of money, and as more people are using these services, that cost gets higher and higher and higher and higher, and it becomes untenable. That's the idea. But you want to keep it... You want a balance there where the fee is not too high to dissuade people from using it, but you want it to be high enough to dissuade Sybil attackers. So what's interesting about Whirlpool is that because Whirlpool has this TX0 setup, which we've talked about before on the pod, it's one of the things I really, really love about Whirlpool compared to Wasabi, where when you enter the Whirlpool, it creates all these equal amount outputs. And you pay the fee there, and then you never pay a fee again. So by doing that, by charging the fee at that point at the transaction zero, and basing it on whichever pool you're going into, not the amount you're sending in. So whether you send 4 Bitcoin into the 0.1, the 0.01, the 1 million sat pool, or if you send 2 Bitcoin into the 1 million sat pool, it's the same fee. So the reason that is because none of those outputs from a single transaction zero, whether that's 20 outputs or 40 outputs or 60 outputs, are operating on different clients. So from a Sybil situation, they're all grouped under the same user, because Whirlpool software, the coordinator is automatically not allowing, you to have multiple inputs in each Whirlpool transaction. So it handles the Sybil resistance. But if you're an actual honest user, you end up paying low fees. It's really elegant how they handle that.
Yes, is there, are they avoiding like a a fee taint, if you will, after TX0?
I wouldn't say taint's not really the right word, but with Wasabi, you have the issue where the Sybil attacker and the Honest user are paying the same fee. In this case, the Sybil attacker is paying a higher fee and the Honest user is paying a lower fee. And you also have the issue with Wasabi that because the fee is taken out every single round, that all the amounts aren't the same across the board, right? The cool thing about Whirlpool's transaction zero is that...
That's what I was getting
You at. Have this almost infinitely growing a non-set because you have every Whirlpool transaction has to have remixes built in and new mixes. So there's this chain of exactly equal outputs that keeps growing. With Wasabi, they're all different amounts.
It gets a little chopped off each remix.
Yeah, every round it's just a slightly different amount.
Yeah, it either gets made smaller or you have to combine it with some change.
Exactly.
Like yeah.
Now, Wasabi does have that additional fee taint that they have a fixed fee address. And that's when we saw with Binance... when they were blocking, when they blocked that guy's withdrawals, it was because there was a connection to that fee address. You know, there's ways for chain analysis companies to detect Wasabi without that, but the fee address makes it easier. They just put the fee address in the software, and if it comes up that it paid the fee address, then they know it was a Wasabi transaction.
Now, what's the site that helps you visualize this?
KYCP.org.
Yeah,
and that's made by the Samurai guys.
Yeah, so you can like plug in your... transaction.
Use Tor or VPN when you do that. Yeah. You know, try not to like put all of your addresses in there. If you're using Tor, keep doing a new circuit. You can click new circuit and then it looks like you're coming from a new place. I don't think they're logging, but if they were presumably logging, you don't want to like put all your transactions in there.
Okay. How's the dojo been running?
Dude, the dojo is fucking great. I'm like super bullish on Samurai. I think it's going to. They're coming out with mobile mixing soon. I think it's going to change the game in terms of using Bitcoin privately. It just makes it so much easier.
To connect via QR code and then just go on the go.
Yeah, and so you're using a full node. And the whole transaction zero concept and the way their fee structure works, as we just went over, is just really fucking cool. And then, of course, then they have the post-mix spend and stuff like that. So the idea is, like, Samurai's philosophy is try and automate best practices from a privacy perspective at the wallet level. And I think that's where we basically have to go if we want people to be using Bitcoin in a more private way. Try and automate as much of it as possible because, you know, it's, you know, we've been on the front lines of trying to help people use Bitcoin more privately, and it's very convoluted and difficult. It's been getting easier every day, but with the upcoming Samurai updates, I think it's gonna like hit a point where overwhelming.
You think Bdion's future's upon us, where people don't even realize they're using Bitcoin?
No,
that they're coin joining.
We're still far from that, and even that point, they'll probably the first people like that are gonna be using horrible services for your privacy. Right, because it's like the easiest way to make this shit easier is to like take the trade off where you destroy privacy and security and stuff like that. You can make it really easy, right? Like look at something like Bottle Pay. Bottle Pay was the UX was beautiful. It was super easy to use, right? But it wasn't private and it was custodial, so you didn't have the
RIP.
Maybe I could see Sphinx making it pretty easy with Lightning.
Yeah. All the Sphinx talk has my sphincter a little loose. I got to take a dump.
I can just continue the pod if you want to go take a break.
Nah, that would be too long. I can hold it. This is good practice.
Doesn't sound healthy, Marty. Doesn't sound healthy.
Hey, you gotta train your colon. Yeah, a lot of Lightning apps upgrading this week.
I think it's because everyone didn't want to release during the holidays, the dead holidays. So right? As soon as the holidays came out, they all released.
Yeah, so we have Zeus, Polar, and RTL all with new releases. Beta 2 for Zeus. Which adds C Lightning support in iOS, which is pretty big.
Yeah, I don't think Zeus was on iOS before, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were Android.
So now they're on Test Flight, if you want to test it. I've used it on Android. Zeus is made by Evan Kaloudis, our friend. He was on the pod as well. He runs Bitcoin Citadel with me. His app is great. It's for controlling your node at home.
Yeah, yeah.
So
pretty much simple. That simple. No, this New York, like the New York squad came out with a lot of updates this week. Polar, which is another New York based Bitcoiner, Jamal, released version 0.2.0, adds Sea Lightning support. I'll actually be sitting down with Jamal on Monday to record an episode with him and talk about Polar.
I'm so fucking bummed I'm going to be missing that one.
I know.
At least I have a good reason.
I got the pleasure of having a nice pre-interview chat with Jamal over the weekend, and it's going to be a fun conversation. I'm bummed you're going to miss it, but you are missing it for good reasons.
It's yeah, exactly. It's important that the New Yorkers step up here, because when you were talking to Jamal, it was at Pierre's going away party on Friday, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we were all celebrating Pierre leaving, which is a huge loss for us.
We weren't celebrating him leaving.
No. We were celebrating him.
Before he leaves.
Before he leaves. Yes. Yeah. And I already miss him. And all of the New Yorkers have to, we have to step up to make sure that we...
Well, if this week's any indication, big it seems shoes like they're to ready fill. To. Because... our other New York friend, Suheb, came out with the RTL release, a major UX upgrade. It looks beautiful.
I've been so excited for this one. I fucking love RTL. It's like a must piece of software for managing your Lightning node, especially if it's routing a lot of payment. Yes, I don't. Is that public information?
Oh, I don't know. I will, where are we? 2120. I'll take that out.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't want to dox anyone.
And yeah, so yeah, RTL is great. Polar is great. Polar is the dev tool where you're able to simulate the Lightning Network. It's fucking awesome. And Zeus, so check all those out. Oh, and LND released 0.90 beta RC1.
Yes, and
the big thing here is the multi-path payment support, otherwise known as AMP.
AMP. And AMP. Who is Alex Bosworth? Was he talking about AMP or submarine swaps? AMP and submarine swaps combined together will help with like multi-channel closeouts. It'll only be one fee, correct? Or something like that.
I'm not sure. One of the cool things about AMP is from a liquidity and a privacy point of view, right? So you have right now your largest payment that you can send is based on your largest channel capacity. When you can go through multiple paths instead of a single channel path, obviously, you'll be able to use your liquidity better to send bigger payments. And then the other thing is from a privacy point of view, because right now, all the nodes on your route can spy on you, especially if they have a group of them. But if you have multiple paths that you're taking, it becomes even more difficult for them to track your transactions. So it's really good from a privacy point of view. The other thing LND added was this thing that was called... I think it's called Circular Send, which is pretty cool. It's the idea is that you can send a circular payments to self is what they're calling it. The idea is that you can send a payment through the Lightning Network that comes back through one of your other channels. So you can, using that, you can rebalance two channels without ever leaving the Lightning Network, right? That concept makes a lot of sense to me. That seems pretty cool.
Yeah. So you basically just send a payment to yourself that allows you to rebalance.
Yeah, it goes through a bunch of other channels and then comes back in through a different channel of yours. So then those two channels of yours have just been balanced out.
It's almost like a submarine swap, but a different...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's...
Same end achieved by different means.
Exactly, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Or like a swap in, swap out, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we talked about this last week, that one of the hardest parts about Lightning is getting inbound liquidity. So that's a really nice way, I think, a clean way for people to get.
Again, man, like.
Actually, you can't get inbound liquidity, your original inbound liquidity from it. But once you have inbound liquidity, you can keep everything balanced up.
Yeah. It's, again, the creative ways in which people are finding ways to make the Lightning Network, more efficient, better, a better user experience, and just better overall infrastructure. The pace is far beyond, we've said this many times, far beyond where I expected it to be. I was saying, I bought a book that was just like the first version of the Bitcoin, the Bitcoin source code. I bought it via Lightning. It was $60. Payment routed in less than 2 seconds.
Oh, that's from our boy Pedro.
Is that Pedro?
Yeah, that's his website.
I didn't realize that was him. What is that website?
You probably used the TFTC channel to did you pay with Lightning or with?
Yeah, I pay with Lightning.
Yeah, you probably used our channel to do it. I opened a bunch of liquidity for him.
Yeah. Yeah, but
he just opened it. It's a brand new site.
Yeah, I did that like a week ago.
What's the website? It's a really good name.
I forgot.
It was a really good name. I was like, ah, you know, as a domain hoarder, I was.
Well,
it was like hash something.
And while you're looking that up, I was doing some data crunching.
Pirate hash. Such a fucking good domain name.
While you were looking that up yesterday, I was doing some data crunching on our 2019, at least May on, from when we started the site and started our BTC Pay server instance, just breaking down all the usage on our site. And it's crazy. Microtransactions are, people are using, people are the dime bag. So the dime bag, out of all the payments that were accepted on our BTC Pay server in 2019, the dime bag, which was 10 cents per 10 cents worth of sats per call, was 60.75% of all the transactions that we received, the payments that went through, and made up less than 1% of the value that we accepted, which is a pretty crazy stat to me.
That is pretty crazy. I guess the dime bag brings it a lot down, you think, or?
Well, yeah, I mean, people are using microtransactions. That's what I got from it.
That's what I'm saying,
and
right?
And that, like, it is, I mean, the use case seems there. Like,
yeah. I mean, I think sending a Lightning payment makes, it's just a cleaner UX.
Yeah. And let's keep in mind, this is one particular use case. Obviously, a shout out's going to go a lot further than a dime bag purchase.
Right. But most of our shout outs are Lightning, right?
I think it's like half and half on the shout outs. Once you get above $20, it's actually an interesting breakdown between Lightning and on chain. The merch sales really, really prove that point.
Yeah, I mean, fees are still really cheap.
Yeah. And then also, some people have a problem finding the Lightning payment on the checkout flow of our store.
BTC Pay.
Yeah.
Because you got to click the Lightning, you have to click the Bitcoin logo on the top, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Many things to work through. It's getting some use, at least.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I just like when I send a Lightning payment that the check mark just pops up right away. Like the payment just, you know, it's just like fucking clean.
Yeah.
I just wanted to do a correction. Someone tweeted at me that this multipath payments is basically basic multipath payments. It's not full amp.
Stepping stone?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure what that distinction is, but I guess it was worth shouting out.
Yeah. I remember seeing this, but didn't really jump into the topic. I thought it was one of those clickbaity headlines. Is it clickbaity? South Korean government committee recommends adding Bitcoin product to the national exchange.
I don't know. Sounds bullish. Is it clickbaity? I mean, they actually did recommend it.
Like what committee is it? Like what?
They're not going to add like... It's like a president's committee. Like they were like created to decide whether or not this was going to happen, is my understanding.
So a mandated committee like sent to research cryptocurrency and Bitcoin?
It's Bitcoin specifically. And like, let's be clear here. It's not going to be, you know, like self-custody Bitcoin. They want to like an exchange traded product where there's a custodian, but traded on their actual exchange. The name of the committee is the Presidential Committee on the Fourth Industrial Revolution.
Boss. Yeah. South Korea is based.
Yeah, you know, sounds legit to me.
Well, why can't we have any committees like that here in America? We need that.
I agree. So even if they don't actually list it, you know,
they're like alluding to the fourth turning in that committee.
Yeah, it is a pretty ridiculous name. It just shows legitimacy, right? Even if they're thinking about it. So that's why I don't consider it clickbaity.
Yeah, no, it was, it's Bitcoin is on the main stage. And we saw that this week do we even have that on the list?
What?
Iran and everything that went on this week.
Figured we were just going to riff on that. Like I felt like it would be a ridiculous bullet point to have, like just Iran.
Yeah. No, I mean, but like this week, if people are really... looking for the Bitcoin as a safe haven narrative to come to fruition, Bitcoin did move in lockstep with risk-off assets like oil and gold this week, both when the tensions were high and we were bombing each other, quote unquote. And then when peace seemed to prevail, it moved down in lockstep with Golden Oil.
We dumped
as well.
Right after Trump's speech.
Yeah, yeah. So it was reacting, at least it seems. We've learned in the past not to really attribute price movements to specific narratives, but it seems at least.
Especially since like whales could be using the narrative.
Exactly.
Go along the narrative.
Yeah, but if you want to latch onto that narrative this week, you can use some correlation anecdotes there.
I mean, look, anecdotally, sats are my fucking safe haven. You know, I'm not going to speak for everyone else, but when everything was going down and people were just like refreshing Twitter to see like if we were at war, which like, by the way, everyone all of a sudden was a war expert, like a Middle East expert.
Dude,
on
I had
Twitter.
No idea who that Soleimani guy.
That was the first time we really had like major U.S. ongoings, like happening, like military ongoings happening in real time on Twitter, I think, right?
I talked about this a lot on the podcast. Last time was 2012 Syria after the gas, the sarin, quote unquote, sarin
right.
gas.
That was a while ago.
Yeah. But that was like the first time Twitter really showed to me that like it is a part of the geopolitical conversation. And if people scream loud enough on Twitter, that politicians will hear it.
It was definitely a lot bigger now.
No doubt. No doubt.
And like we had like a lot of fake news coming around and stuff, like all different casualty numbers. And like meanwhile, no one died supposedly.
Old videos. It was, yeah. So let's talk about that. It was.
Wait, 1 second. But okay. While all this was going down, all this uncertainty and everything, the one thing, like I knew Bitcoin was just being Bitcoin. You know, I knew I still had my sats, you know, that's, it's a safe haven just in that innate, you know, there's so much uncertainty and then you have Bitcoin.
Yeah. It's there. Find safety in sats. Freeze.
Exactly.
And yeah, especially if you self custody, it gives you even more.
No. Yeah. Only if you self custody.
Only if you, yeah. Yes. Only if you self custody, not especially only if you self custody, that's certainty that you get. Does definitely come with some anxiety, but I think the overwhelming feeling is security. But back to the topic at hand, the events of the week between the U.S. and Iran, and I don't know, it was like it just seemed like puppet masters manipulating the masses and like doing a waltz on the global stage, like. Like we were warning each other that we're going to bomb each other, and you bomb each other in places where nobody's going to get killed. And
what the fuck was
it? Was all like very
there?
Too symbolic and very choreographed.
And yeah, and then like Trump tweeted out like all is well, like we're getting like missiles are being fired at our bases, and like we don't know what the casualty numbers are or anything. Everybody's like, so far so good.
Everybody's freaking out on Twitter.
Yeah, so they supposedly. I mean, this is not really in our purview, but might as well talk about it because everyone's freaking out. They, like, supposedly, the Iranians supposedly, like, called up the Iraqis and told them, we're going to bomb this joint U.S.-Iraqi base. And then they, like, evacuated and took precautions, and that's why no one died, right?
Yeah, and they droned, like, they bombed, like, the drone area where there was nobody going to be getting in there, no personnel going to be.
It's where we launched the drone that killed Soleimani, right?
Yeah, I guess.
But it was just weird. It was just a very weird... I feel like we don't know everything. Let me put it that way.
No, that's why I actually made a concerted effort not to write about it or tweet about it much, because I honestly was like, I've never heard of this guy. No, it seems like the only thing I was retweeting about it was Michael Krieger at Liberty Blitzkrieg on Twitter. He just basically... before we even started bombing each other, called it out in the beginning of the week, like, be prepared, you're about to be onslaughted with more propaganda more heavily than you've ever experienced. You're just going to be very confused. And that's actually how the week played out.
The important thing is that Bitcoin just kept marching on, just block after block. And that's just safe haven, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It was there. And this is a good segue into the next topic, which I wrote about in the Ben today. Neil Woodfine put together a great thread of how Bitcoin can still run in an offline environment today. Something that we talk about a lot here at TFTC, and Neil just did a monster thread. I believe it was 50 tweets going through all the technology and hardware that exist within the Bitcoin ecosystem. I know people hate that word, but whatever. Today, and again, Bitcoin, I think, Bitcoin as a project has its priority straight. Like, we're going to need this hardware in the future if shit ever does hit the fan.
It was actually like a presentation. He gave a presentation. Mm-hmm. So we're going to link to the video for the presentation and his slides. And then he made a baller ass thread highlighting it all, which actually, as like a Twitter user, I really appreciate the thread. The thread was great.
Well, see, as a Twitter, I only knew about the thread. And I wrote about it today.
So it was actually like a video. It was actually a live presentation he gave. But yeah, you should all check it out. It's super important.
Yeah, it is. And it's important to work on this stuff today and have it ready. Like we say, you want Bitcoin before you need it, and you want this infrastructure in place before you really need it.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. You're not like setting up a sat node when shit hits the fan. Like, you have to be prepared ahead of time.
Yeah. And the technology to do so is not that expensive. I believe tweet 15 of that thread, he showed a picture of $150 worth of hardware that could have you accepting Bitcoin transactions from the satellite node within a couple hours.
The harder part is broadcasting. What was really cool, because you can't broadcast through the node, you can only receive. But what's also really nice is when you receive through the satellite, it's more privacy because it's passive. Like, no one can tell like you're actually running a Bitcoin node. And then the other thing you mentioned, which is I think often overlooked, is like everyone in a community doesn't have to, that's like off the grid, doesn't have to run a satellite connected node. One person can do that, and then they could have like Wi-Fi repeaters that operate around that extend the connection.
That's one of the key phrases I liked of the presentation, is internet minimized. It's never going to be internet free, but internet minimized.
Because we still need to like get the transactions to miners and get the blocks from miners. And
yeah. And I had something else I wanted to add.
It's more like the last mile, the last 10 miles.
Yeah. What the fuck?
Sat node, I guess it could be like the last 50 miles, 100 miles if you wanted to. The broadcast is more difficult, as you said. But stuff like transaction 10 would make it easier because you can go through, you know, mesh and then do a SMS hop at the end and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I remember what I wanted to say, get a little cosmic. Another thing that Neil mentioned in his presentation and thread, Bitcoin is literally flowing through you at all times via these satellite waves. So like, if you are in the area in which the satellite is covered,
everywhere, basically.
Basically everywhere. Like, you literally have Bitcoin data streaming through you via radio waves at all time.
Because it's multiple satellites. And they, just to be clear, Blockstream doesn't own these satellites. They're renting space on commercial satellites.
They own channels. And yeah, it's, again, it is an alternative, and it is a centralized alternative.
It's absolutely centralized, but you can verify the transactions with your own node to make sure that they are according to the rule set that your node enforces.
Yes.
So you can verify.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely centralized.
I imagine with people like Elon launching Starlink and stuff like that, though, there will be competition for satellite nodes in the future.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully we have tons and tons of different providers.
I think that may be the case. I don't know about this Tesser Cube PGP. This is you.
Well, you know CoinShare, right? CoinShare NZ.
He's in New Zealand, right?
Yeah.
He did the.
Met him?
Never met him in person, but he did the GoTenna demonstrations about a year ago, right?
I met him in Riga. Awesome fucking dude. Really good dude. So he actually recommended Tesser Cube to me, like in November or something, and it was one of those situations where someone liked the tweet from November and it popped up in my notifications and I missed it like in November. I didn't even see when he had replied. So I was like, well, we should mention it now. Tesser Cube is interesting because it's PGP on mobile and it's both on iPhone and Android. And it's extremely, I've downloaded it. It seems extremely easy to use. CoinShare recommended it. I respect CoinShare, so I was passing along the recommendation. I haven't used it I've just downloaded and tested it out. I haven't actually like used it for a while. It doesn't appear you can verify, you know, one of the things we talk about here is verifying PGP signatures of your downloads to make sure they haven't been changed from whoever created the software distribution. I don't think you can verify downloads with this. I think it's only for PGP messaging, but I might be wrong. Like, I played with it for like 15, 20 minutes, basically just trying to figure out if I could verify signatures that, you know, of downloads.
Yeah, and this is Tesser Cube, TesserCube.com. Let's go check it out. Looks like a cool app. I haven't played around with it at all yet. You know, Uncle Marnie's a late adopter. This is something I like that Cranking does every year. They release their yearly government request transparency report, and it seems like they're getting more and more requests as the years go on.
This is scary as fuck. I mean, we all should know that this is happening. All
right, so here are the stats. 2019 global law enforcement requests, they're up 49% from last year. This is Kraken alone, mind you. And think about where they are located globally.
Because no one else releases this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all getting hit with tons and tons of requests. So again, anyone who does KYC.
The increase in requests from 2018 is up about 50%. There's 710 total information requests that were received in 2019. There were 1,222 impacted accounts. 62% of all requests resulted in data provided. It's a pretty high hit rate. And then 28% of requests were non-valid. Meaning the law enforcement agency reached out and they really didn't have any authority or what's the word I'm looking for? They didn't have any rights to the data.
Wonder what happened to the other 10%.
Subpoenas, summons, production order, European investigation order, and other valid requests to make up the rest of it.
In the little bar underneath.
Yes. So total requests annually last year is up from 410 from 475. That's pretty big. And then the U.S. leads all countries of requested agencies by far. 432 of the total 710, so way over.
The FBI being the main agency asking for information.
Yeah, FBI, the DEA number two, ICE number three.
So should we talk about what kind of information they could get from Kraken?
Yeah. What information have you given up to Kraken so they can get that, right?
Yeah, so let's talk about that. It's deposits, addresses you've deposited from, addresses you've withdrawn to, Bitcoin addresses, home address, all this information you gave them for KYC, purchase history, bank account information, all your fiat transfers and stuff.
Yeah, and that's a very good point to make the point that Kraken puts out this report because they don't want to do this stuff. Jesse Powell puts this out to be like, hey, look, this is what the governments are making us do. And I know a lot of you hate on KYC AML there out there as much as we do. And I would caution you not to come at these companies as hard as people have in the past and come at the policies themselves. The companies don't like these regulations or policies. That's why Kraken puts out this report to sort of highlight how arduous it is for them.
And it costs them millions of dollars, and let alone the time to comply.
Yeah, I'm trying to find.
And it hurts the privacy of their users. I mean, so this is one of the reasons why using CoinJoin is so important, right? Because if you have a request here, and Kraken has to comply and give, let's say, a withdrawal address. With that withdrawal address, like if you don't use CoinJoin, all future transactions can be tracked, you know, for varying degrees of probability depending on how you're sending it. But if you're just completely disregarding the privacy aspect, then all future and past transactions can be tracked relatively easily. So it's, you know, something you got to consider.
Definitely consider it, and then definitely consider it because you can actually make these efforts fruitless at the end of the day. Another piece I wrote about this week was a blog post that Elaine Ho posted over the weekend, and she basically repackaged a presentation she gave at the Magical Crypto Conference last year and put it in a blog post for him and explained that we need to get Bitcoin to a point where the laws that are currently in place are just too dumb to enforce. Like, if you are trying to track these transactions in a world where a majority of Bitcoiners are coin joining, it just doesn't make any sense. And the cost to enforce is too much. Talk about this a lot.
But I love, Lane's blog is great. Everyone should be following that blog. She doesn't post it on Twitter, so you have to actually follow the blog. We do have a link to it in the list already. One thing to keep in mind there is that we are very far away from the majority of people using CoinJoin.
Yes. That was apparent in the SAT standard over the weekend.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we can ever get to a majority, but I think if we get to like a critical mass, that might be enough. Like mixed with things like PayJoin and stuff that make these... because when you're tracking transactions through the Bitcoin network, it's all a probability game. You know, some transactions are higher probability that it's the same person. Like if you send all of your funds with no change from one address to another address, that's like 99% of the time that's a self transfer. Because why would you be paying someone with no change? Like what situation is like, oh, give me everything in your pocket. You know, like that just doesn't happen in real life. So things like PayJoin and stuff that break down those probabilities and make it really hard to guess where, you know, Bitcoin changes hands. But yeah, just at the most basic level, you send one transaction, then all of a sudden the probability of it being you, while still high, you could be sending it to someone else, just like one hop, you know. But CoinJoin breaks those links a lot better if you do it appropriately, if you do it properly, which is difficult, but things like Samurai are making it easier. So
no, and I really
cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, and that's why I like the framing of Elaine's blog post. It was like, hey, the technology exists today to make these laws too dumb to enforce. You just have to act. You have to act.
Yeah, and I want to be absolutely clear here. Like, don't break the law. We're not telling anybody to break the law.
Oh, God, no. We're not insinuating
anything. Yeah, these leaks is isn't just for like government requests and stuff, right? Like if Kraken's database gets leaked or hacked and stuff like that, then they can also be used against you by tons of bad people. This is about financial privacy, like the most basic level of financial privacy. And then the other thing is, like, I get a lot of shit about this. Because Lightning is very new, but I do think Lightning is going to help a lot here in the privacy realm. Things like it doesn't have any toxic change when you pay people, that the transactions aren't recorded on chain. So a combination with CoinJoin techniques, plus then funding Lightning channels with those, you know, post-CoinJoin UTXOs, could end up being very powerful here for just, like, very user-friendly privacy. So I'm cautiously optimistic about that, and it's definitely something to watch. I mean, you shouldn't be opening channels without coin joining first, in my opinion. Even if you fuck up the coin join, is better than not doing it.
Yeah. I've made that mistake in the past. I will try to be better going forward, though, Matthew.
Be better, Marty.
I'll try. But staying on that privacy tip, another thing that got written about in the Bent this week, I don't know how much weight we should put into this movement, but I noticed yesterday morning, was it yesterday morning or 2 days ago? I forget at this point.
Yesterday. Are we talking about gold?
No, it was 2 days ago. It was 2 days ago. I'm talking about Liquid Tether. So 2 days ago, there was a whale alert that a trader had moved 15 or converted 15 million Tether from the ERC-20 version to the Liquid Tether version.
It was Bitfinex who converted it, right?
Well, Paolo from Bitfinex replied to the whale alert. It might have been Bitfinex. Maybe
because it was going to Bitfinex's treasury wallet, right?
I don't know.
Or it was going from Bitfinex to Tether's wallet, and he said,
"I don't know. I'm not positive." I know Paolo from Bitfinex pointed out that it was transmuted.
It was just ERC-20 Tether was being removed, and they were adding Liquid Tether tokens instead.
The point I'm trying to get here is that this is a privacy gain. It definitely is a privacy gain for this trader, and that's a trend that we've been looking at since at least BitBlockBoom when we did the live show. We brought this up. Something I've been wondering. Liquid Blockstream's federated sidechain has, I've said it before, to me at least, just observing how people react to it, it seems like this ugly stepchild of the Blockstream product suite, and people have sort of been like, who's going to use that? Who's going to use that? And I've always been like, that makes sense with confidential transactions and a Liquid Tether coin, that the traders would want that because you can't track the movement of their funds from exchange to exchange. Because
confidential transactions blinds the transaction amount. You can't see how much or what assets being sent. You can't see if it's Tether or Bitcoin or Tether Gold
some
or
other asset,
some shitty equity token or something.
Yeah. So Whale Alert's not gonna be able to track those particular 15 million Tether unless they come out of that side chain. So that was something, a trend to stay on top of. I don't know if that's gonna be a big trend among traders. It could dissipate pretty quickly, but at least somebody. $15 million is nothing to scale out. I believe that's 100 and
I mean,
some
it's
Bitcoin.
Negligible in terms of Tether outstanding supply.
Yes.
What did Nick say, like 800 million on Tron? There's like 800 million Tether on Tron.
It's like hard to verify though.
But that's because Tron owns Poloniex now, right? So they need a Tether pair, and they're making like Tron their exchange token.
Yeah.
Which is just, but anyway, just a little backstory here. Tether obviously requires a third party. I would never use it. It's, you know, you have to trust that third party. It's basically custodial. They're supposedly holding the dollars. So you have to just assume that you have to trust them that they're holding the dollars. First they were using Omni, which was colored coins on Bitcoin. Then they switched to ERC-20 pretty much in mass relatively recently. And that's because it's just like pretty easy to
there's more
receive
wallet
tokens.
Support.
Yeah. It's just an Ethereum wallet to receive tokens. You know, the Omni doesn't have, I think it's only got one wallet. But now maybe, and then you started seeing them go to like Tron and EOS and shit. Now maybe they'll move over to Liquid. It's yet to be seen. The thing is, Liquid itself is basically semi-custodial because it's got this federated security model. So there's no miners or anything. It's basically a bunch of regulated entities that are all sharing a multi-sig key. So when you use Liquid, you have to trust those entities. And even though you have like something like confidential transactions, I'm pretty sure to get out of Liquid, you have to go through KYC. And if you go from exchange to exchange, like you're going from like Bitfinex to Kraken and you're sending 15 million Tether, 7 million Tether, like you're protected from like Whalebot seeing it, but obviously like Bitfinex and Kraken see it, right?
Yeah.
Because you're sending from their exchange to their exchange.
It's just an improvement in UX and the fact that traders that are in the competition to trade against you cannot see that you're moving funds, right?
Yeah, it's just a different trust model with different trade-offs, and it's nice that Bitcoiners have options, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like Matt said, Tether could one day just not work. Stable coins are inherently unstable at the end of the day. They are susceptible to black swans. But if you are using them and you want to get the most utility out of them, in my opinion, again, I think Liquid Tether with confidential transactions makes the most sense, and we'll continue following this story as it's not a story, this trend, if it develops. Who knows? It could be Bitfinex just trying to get some hype going or something like that.
Sats are my stable coin.
Same.
Well, they need to have the Tether ready on the different chains if they're going to support it. That's, you know, that's the same reason why Tron has like $800 million on it. It doesn't mean that actual $800 million worth of use is happening on Tron. It just means they want to have that fiat ready.
If people trade with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. A lot of Ben topics this week. I wrote about gold accumulation by central banks yesterday. Last year, 2019, was the year in which central banks accumulated the most gold since the 1970s, which was interesting. And they have central banks collectively around the world have added to their gold holdings every year since 2010. So I wrote that, and then some freak out there at Mining Stacks on Twitter at Mining Stacks, MiningStacks. He's been making a bunch of cool videos, and basically he created a video that tracks the gold accumulation of central bankers over the last 20 years and then pins that against when Bitcoin came to be and Bitcoin's market cap. So
this video is awesome.
Video is awesome, and
you
it's scary.
Speed it up a little bit, though.
Yeah, speed it up a little bit. You see the jockeying for gold reserves. You see China come on the scene, Russia come on the scene. Then in 2010, which scared the shit out of me, the IMF was already on the scene for a while, and then the BIS comes out of nowhere, and they take up a good portion of the top 10.
That was weird.
Yeah. So they hop in and out, like, in the early 2000s. They come back in the late 2000s. So the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements.
The IMF's in there, too.
The IMF is in there as well. The IMF's a little underling of the BIS, but the BIS is the big bank that really nobody knows too much about. It's a supranational, unelected entity that holds a top 10 amount of gold in the world.
Pretty crazy. Well, at the end, they weren't on the top 10 anymore.
Probably.
They had just fallen off again.
Yeah, they've been in the top 10 multiple times throughout the last decade, which is a little funny to me. But on top of that, it was crazy to see how quickly Bitcoin hopped on the chart and then stayed on it after 2017.
Yeah. Yeah, it was in second place for a little bit.
Yeah.
That was pretty exciting to watch when I watched that part of the video. I mean, the U.S. has been just massively accumulating. Russia made a lot of strides. I saw Russia go up a lot.
Yeah, well, I started following that trend early in the summer because I noticed that the biggest accumulators of gold between central banks over the last 20 years have been Russia and China. Like, it looks like they've been playing catch up. So it seems like and it's funny, like, all these central, like, again, 2019 was the year in which central banks around the world accumulated the most gold on record in metric tons since the 70s. And it's like all the mainstream media and the central bankers like to paint gold bugs as crazy preppers, but it seems that the central banks are prepping themselves.
Yeah, right. So are they like the crazy mountain men preppers, or is something going on here?
Yeah, are we allowed to call them out? And call them crazy? I don't know.
I would say it's a pretty alarm. Like, if you don't own any gold or Bitcoin, like, that's a pretty alarming video to watch.
Yeah. And it's a pretty alarming trend. I mean,
if you don't see your country up high on that list, too, it's got to be, like, extra alarming.
Yeah.
We have the reserve currency of the world, and we have a massive stockpile that's bigger than anyone else, right?
Yeah, it's like 530 billion.
What does
billion.
That say?
Yeah. Yeah. And this trend of buying heavily is all post 2008.
Yeah, you see it. We were actually going down a little bit. Everyone was going down, and then all of a sudden you see the collapse, and then just everything's... Well, they went down for a little bit while longer after, probably because they needed to sell some and shit to finance operations or something, right?
Well, yeah, you had the crash.
And then all of a sudden, right after the crash, they just start accelerating insane amounts.
Yeah, yeah. Cool video. Shout out to Mining Stacks at Mining Stacks on Twitter. We'll put that link in the show notes. And then another shout out to some user generated content.
This video is hilarious.
This is the weirdest thing that happened to me in a while.
I had to put this one in there.
You go with it.
But Uncle Marty got a shout out, right? It was like it was supposed to be. They were like fund managers, right?
Yeah.
And they were discussing Bitcoin.
Somebody made a video vignette discussing Bitcoin, and it's just like a 45-second video
dramatization.
Right. Uncle Marty gets a shout out. That was
Plan B gets a shout out. Hodlnot gets a shout
Travis
out.
Travis Kling safe.
It was super fun. It was just a fun video.
Yeah,
I like that shit.
I love that stuff too.
Did we give the guy a shout out? Was Creative L and Run on Twitter?
Yes, at Creative.
Oh, Land Run.
Land Run. Land Run.
Wow, I've been reading that Creative L and Run. But yeah, you're right, Land Run. The other thing we missed here was this Russian state energy company.
Oh, yes, we don't want to miss this.
I think Marty didn't want to, he just intentionally ignored it because he thinks like America will be the number one mining. He's very bullish on American mining, so he wanted to disregard the Russian mining ops.
No, I'm a lover of all mining operations, especially if they're pushing it forward and say, yeah, Russia is, this is an article by Anna Bydakova. Bydakova?
I don't know. I wasn't going to try and pronounce her name. It's pretty hilarious.
And I'm sorry if I'm butchering your name, but
this is crazy because it's the state energy company.
Yeah, it's a state run nuclear plant. It's renting space to energy hungry Bitcoin miners.
Yeah, they're not going to mine themselves, but they're making it as easy as possible for miners to move in and take it. They're going to give them cheap energy contracts. And basically, you know, these nuclear energy plants have the same issue as like hydro, where the power is just constantly getting generated and it's not always getting consumed, right? So it's really nice to have, whether it's mining or whether it's traditional data centers, be able to have constant energy.
Well, there's like an interesting, unrelated to mining sort of theme to this story too, which we should really point out and which should really, if you're an American, make you think about what we're doing in this country. So they want the miners to come in and use this excess nuclear because it's already being used for personal data centers to store Russians' personal data. They don't want to store that in any servers outside of Russia. So they're forcing the data centers to do it on site at these nuclear power plants, which is just interesting to me. They don't want Russia's making a move to take control of their digital infrastructure, which actually that shouldn't surprise you. They're pretty despotic. But.
Well, they're pretending. I mean, because the EU's made similar overtures. I think they're already enforcing it. They're pretending it's for the privacy of their citizens, right? Like, why do you want to trust? You don't want the Americans or the Chinese to be able to look at this data. But really what Russia, it's twofold for Russia. Like, they'd prefer if they weren't looking at the data, but they really want to look at it themselves, right? So that's why they want to keep it domestic. And recently we talked about how they're having all the ISPs install black boxes so that they can both monitor and shut down the internet on demand if they need to. Going back to Neil's talk, that's why it's so important to build out this infrastructure.
Yeah, so start building your satellite nodes if you're a Russian listener. I'm sure you guys are way ahead
everywhere.
Of it.
Doesn't matter everywhere. Where you are.
Yeah, it's true. American too.
It's definitely, it's on my list of projects. I gotta get that shit done.
Me as well. Well, that's all for our list here.
You got anything to riff on? We have a podcast coming up. What's our time check here?
We've got to go. We've got to post this.
Okay. Well, we love you, freaks.
Yeah. Keep crushing. Peace and love.